If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm still here. We are still happily married together on a podcast. 3 years later, over 3 years, and still going strong. Finn Martin. Finn, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Kenny. I'm doing okay. After three years, still very much in love. The brotherly type, of course.
Brotherly, yeah. No other kind. We don't want Andy getting any ideas that
we are both very happily in our relationships.
We are, exactly. What a weird start. Anyway, how's things been? We're starting to see in the UK anyway, we're starting to you see lockdown phased out a little bit. We're starting to get to do a little bit more things. Are you feeling a bit more back to normal?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was sort of a bit weird. I was in my hometown of Kendal on Saturday and didn't go into any pubs, but I had a walk around town and a lot of the pubs were still shut and some of them were open, but there was very few people in and it just all seemed, I mean, I saw the images online, particularly in Soho, of like, you know, street was packed, you know, and there was some scenes of, really busy, but what I saw, and I've spoken to a few people since who were out over the weekend in a few different towns and cities, and they said it was really quite subdued. It was, you know, as if people are being very cautious, and a lot of places aren't even open yet. They're just, I think they're kind of just seeing what happens and staggering their opening dates, which, you know, you can understand, can't you? You can understand why a pub would think, well, let's just give it a couple of weeks because we don't want to open and then have to close again a week later. So I do understand that. But yeah, it feels like we're heading back to normal, but we're still not there yet.
No, we're not. And I mean, speaking of heading back to normal, WWE are not heading back to normal because, according to a story by Fightful, I know Post Wrestling had put out the schedule of all the tapings through to SummerSlam, and it was all obviously at the Performance Center. And SummerSlam, Fightful have now reported, is going to be at the Performance Center. So the dream of going to a venue in front of fans is just not looking like it's going to happen. I mean, I know this is like, you know, it's like I'd be trying to ask Mystic Mega question at this point, but I mean, do you think it's even a viable idea we might see Survivor Series in front of a crowd of people? Or, I mean, because it just doesn't seem like over in the US that it's getting anywhere near as sort of taken care of as it needs to be to even begin the idea of an arena opening.
Yeah, I mean, over there with the numbers, I think, was it last week, was the highest number of infections in a week in the States. I mean, over here, I mean, happily, I mean, people are preparing themselves for spikes in the UK, but happily at the moment, the numbers are low and going down. But I don't think anyone's really taking that for granted. And we've seen in various other countries around the world where they've had to have like mini lockdowns because there's been spikes. I mean, the States, it doesn't seem like they're anywhere near the point yet where the infection rate is down so they can then safely reopen, or at least, you know, cautiously reopen and be on a pathway towards we can start actually holding events in front of arenas with thousands of fans again. It seems so distant. I mean, there's obviously no way SummerSlam is ever going to happen in an arena setting. And as things stand at the moment on, what is it, July 7th today, is it? July 7th?
July 7th, yeah.
July 7th today. Survivor Series, what's that?
November 20th, say, for example.
So 4.5 months off. I mean, you would hope so. You would hope that we'll be in a position by then, or WWE would be in a position by then, where it could stage a large event in an arena setting, perhaps, you know, almost like the House of Commons, where you've got like some rules cordoned off and people are only on, you know, people are on like you know, every other row people are sitting in, so it's not full. Say the capacity would be about 40%. You would hope by then that they could put that many people in the building. But then, of course, then you get to the problem of, okay, so people can sit, can only occupy 40% of the seats, but they've still got to come through the same entrances. They've still got to say that you use the same toilets. So you've got the pinch points, bottlenecks there. You know, but people using the concession stands, and you know, presumably the merch stands wouldn't be open, but people would still want to go for drinks and food. So you've then got a situation where people are going to be in close proximity with each other again. So it just seems so distant. It seems so far away. It seems just to make that happen seems so difficult, because I don't think any sport that I can think of has opened up yet and is allowing fans in, even in countries where the infection rate is really low. I mean, maybe I'm missing something here, but I think like NASCAR's back, isn't it, in America? I don't think they're allowing fans in.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of kind of I don't want to say weird countries, but there's a couple of countries, like I think Macedonia were still doing like boxing shows with crowds.
Okay.
Like maybe last month, but in terms of like the kind of the Western world and even the kind of big hitters in other parts of the world, like Japan and China and Korea, nothing. It's just not happening yet. So yeah. You know, even in Japan, I know New Japan have opened up. I think New Japan have done a couple of shows, or it's either Stardom or New Japan have done a couple of shows at very small capacity with masks.
Okay.
And I think GCW and another show in Indiana did outdoor stuff, because outdoor stuff is easier, right? Because sure. we've seen it with AEW. You can kind of outdoor, you can have people be socially distant and wear masks and kind of get away with it. But in terms of indoor of any kind of sports, really, especially in the Western world, it's just not happened.
That's it. And it does. I mean, no one's even talking about it being imminent. I mean, it's not even really a discussion yet, is it? I mean, I think it was the culture secretary or somebody was talking about this on the news yesterday, and they asked, it actually was the culture secretary, and they said, is there going to be a panto season this year? Which would be, when would that start? November?
End of November, start of December, yeah.
Yeah. And he was saying he would love there to be a panto season, but I mean, he wasn't even speculating as to whether or not that might happen. And that's late November. So that's sort of around the time of Survivor Series. And that's in the UK, you know, in which the infection rate is really quite low now, because of the practicalities of putting people inside a fairly small venue or a venue that holds like a couple of thousand people and getting them in, getting them out, and, you know, just doing all the things you've got to do when you're in a theatre and not potentially causing a spike in infection. So it's really tricky. It's certainly not imminent. It's still a few months off at least. I think it's probably maybe in September they'll start having these conversations about, you know, whether or not this can happen. Obviously, we know Vince, as soon as he can do it, he'll do it. I did notice on SmackDown and Raw of last week that there was far fewer people behind the plexiglass inside the performance center. Mm-hmm. Everyone's wearing masks now behind the Perspex. And it did look like most of them were socially distancing. And for a few weeks, they weren't wearing masks. Well, actually, quite a few weeks, they weren't wearing masks. And lots of them were right on top of each other. So, you know, it does seem like the evidence is there. WWE has responded to this higher infection rate by reducing the number of people who are there in the performance center to watch SmackDown and Raw and NXT. And I think that was the right decision. I'm sure you would agree with that, Kenny.
Yeah, definitely the right decision. And the reason I kind of bring up the SummerSlam thing was mainly just to ask, you know, we're now approaching SummerSlam. We're not going to have a crowd. Well, I mean, we are going to have people. We are going to have some PC trainees and stuff, which is more than we had at WrestleMania. But what do you want to see WWE do with SummerSlam to make it feel special?
Oh, I mean, I don't really know what they can do. I mean, presumably there'll be a cinematic match. I mean, I'm hoping that this swamp match with Bray and Braun is going to, revive my interest in these matches after the takeover in your house match and the crazy match between the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders at Backlash. So, I mean, a cinematic match was like the selling point in the COVID era for a pay-per-view event. So, I mean, they need to really pull the socks up with the Wyatt versus Strowman match to make these matches seem special again. So I think I'd like to see a couple of matches that are outside the arena, pre-taped and held somewhere else. But obviously I would like those matches to really deliver and not be, you know, silly or frivolous or thrown together like the, you know, the Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, and the Street Profits Viking Raiders matches were. I mean, to me, they haven't ruined the cinematic match concept, but I think they've damaged it and it needs to be rebuilt. Its aura needs to be reconstructed, and I'm hoping they're going to do that at Extreme Rules. So something like that. I mean, I think I'd like to see Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre. I think that can be a main event. It'd be interesting to see if Brock Lesnar returns, won't it? We haven't seen him since WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's been nowhere to be seen. I mean, the thing, because with WrestleMania, you know, you mentioned the cinematic matches. At WrestleMania, we had the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match, which were both massive successes. And that's a really big bar to kind of try and do something that can be talked about in the same level. So I'm curious to see what they do. I mean, I've got to imagine we're probably going to see a Firefly Funhouse match. That's probably going to be the big match. I wonder who that'll be against. Maybe it'll be Jeff Hardy, maybe it'll be somebody else. But I think that the Firefly Funhouse match is probably the best bet for it to be a success.
Yeah, and I mean, and if Brock Lesnar does return, and you know, if he can return or it can return or he's willing to return, I think he should do, because he will he'll give SummerSlam, you know, it'll be a stature enhancer for SummerSlam. It'll give that show a lift. So it would be nice to see him back, but who's he going to face? Do you think maybe Lashley? I mean, can't imagine that they're going to pit him against Drew McIntyre again, although they might. They might put the Randy Orton McIntyre match off until Survivor Series. It's tough to say, really, but I think Lesnar needs to be there to really make SummerSlam shine and, you know, to heat up SummerSlam. So we feel the heat at SummerSlam. I think Lesnar needs to be there.
And with Heyman and MVP as the mouthpieces could be pretty fun for that.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this many times before, that I've always felt that Lashley and Lesnar was a, you know, big pay-per-view match, certainly the caliber of a SummerSlam match. So I'd like to see that. I think MVP's done really well since over the last few months as a manager. I'm hoping that Cedric Alexander gets on board the MVP collective there, the MVP faction. They haven't got a name yet, have they? They need a name, this faction. This faction needs a name. What should the name be, Kenny?
I'm bad at names. I'm good at coming up with names after the fact, but on the spot, I'm dreadful.
Yeah, we're really good at criticising other names, but we can't come up with any names by ourselves.
Listen, I'm not paid to do it. Pay me to do it, I'll be more on the ball. But, you know, if I'm not paid to do it...
But that faction, if he recruits Cedric, which I think he's going to, then that faction at that point, it becomes a faction then, because there'll be three of them. So it needs a name there. But yeah, I'm all on board for MVP versus Paul Heyman, and, you know, on the mic, and Lashley versus Lesnar in the ring. I think that's a SummerSlam caliber match.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be fun to see. Before we talk about some more current wrestling stuff, I did want to quickly bring up, because I saw this on my feed a couple of days ago. It's today. Today, July 7th, is the 24-year anniversary of WCW Bash at the Beach from 1996, where Hulk Hogan turned heel and joined and formed the NWO with Nash and Hall. I'm always curious about these big stories and how you found out it was going to be happening, covering it for the magazine. So what are your memories of the Hogan heel turn, when you got a sense it was going to happen, covering it for the magazine, the interest level that you saw from sort of punters? What do you remember about it?
Well, I mean, I had no knowledge that it was going to happen in advance. And it was, you know, lots of people have talked about this since, and it was kept, you know, very few people knew that Hogan was one of the contenders for this. They kept it, you know, it was kept the cards very close to to their vest. And a lot of people didn't think that Hogan would go through with it. I think even Bischoff was surprised when he actually agreed to it and to do the turn. I remember it being enormous. He was on the front cover of issue 26 of Power Slam in his new getup. And the headline was Heel Hogan. And I did like a story on him. And I remember like 2 weeks prior to Bash at the Beach was WWF's King of the Ring, which featured the Steve Austin victory in the tournament and his famous acceptance speech with how would you describe Doc Hendricks' reaction to Steve Austin?
Flabbergasted and disgusted.
Dumbfounded, wasn't he, by
the
raw power of that acceptance speech.
The 36-year-old Doc Hendricks was dumbfounded. Just let that sink in, everybody.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, well, he had a hard life, didn't he, Michael Hayes? As you said, I think he had the longest paper round of any paper boy in the States.
When he was he's still on that paper round. I think he's still delivering papers today.
So we had, Austin delivering that titanic speech, that just, blew people away. It's like, what's this? And then 2 weeks later, it was as if Hogan had seen that, witnessed that on pay-per-view. It's just like, my God, I've got to up my game because Austin's just done the promo of the year, possibly the promo of the decade. And I need to try and top that. And I think Hogan did that. And that was one of the most amazing speeches I've ever seen. We've said it before, Gene Okerlund was a huge part of the success of that. Getting in there, holding the mic up, scolding Hogan for associating himself with Nash and Hall after Hogan had dropped the big leg on Randy Savage in the match and revealed to the world that he was the third man and that he was part of the Outsiders. And then he used the phrase New World Order, and that's what the faction was named afterwards. So, I mean, it was tremendous. It was just a tour de force by Hogan. It was just, I don't know whether he ever did a better promo than that. He obviously did some amazing promos in his career, but that's the one to me that would be, the go-to promo. If someone were to say to me, well, show me Hogan at the peak of his powers, and I'd say, watch that speech there. And just how he, seamlessly, effortlessly went from babyface. He'd been a babyface since 1981, I think it was, he turned. It was 81 or 82. So he'd been a babyface for 14, 15 years at that point in the States. Obviously, still played heel in New Japan when he was opposing Anoki and some of the other people out there. But in the States, he'd been a babyface for, I think it's 14 or 15 years straight. And he just went out there and did that heel promo. And it was just awesome. It was just awesome. Knocking Vince McMahon, working so well with Gene Okerlund, who's there saying, how can you associate yourself with these people? Look at all the crap in this ring. This represents you, Hogan. And Hogan's like, no, this represents all the people out here. I did it for the kids. I did it, came out here, the reception that I got from you people. And then the famous line, you fans can stick it, brother. I mean, that was the line, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think some people look back at it now and they'll maybe see it without seeing the context of it and think, oh, it was okay. But like, this is, he had for all these years been the squeaky clean babyface guy. And the fact that because the other thing that was so clever about it was that they kind of, and this doesn't get talked about, I don't think, enough, but like the idea that Bischoff kind of pitched it or positioned it as that Nash, Hall and Hogan were all coming from the WWF to fuck WCW, like they were Vince's guys coming in. Yeah. And so it was so clever. And I did it all for the money. I kissed the babies for the money. And it was such a good promo. And a lot of Hogan's heel promos would go on to be a bit rambly, but he was very coherent here. And I agree with you. I think it's the best promo he's ever done.
I mean, we always sort of made fun of Hogan's acting performances. I mean, as an actor, he was just garbage, wasn't he? I mean, it was just embarrassing whenever he appeared on screen.
Apart from No Holds Barred, the cinematic masterpiece.
I mean, that's what they need to do in WWE, don't they? They need to recreate No Holds Barred as a cinematic match. You know, as a that would be funny, wouldn't it? So, I mean, it really would be hilarious. But, I mean, Hogan there when he was doing that speech, he's channeling rage. There's a lot of inner rage there. He's really mad. You know, he was upset that people booed him. You know, he'd gone to WCW in 1994. Received a bit of a frosty reception in some parts of the country, which was understandable because he was the guy who represented WWF, and WWF was, you know, the company that basically put Crockett Promotions out of business and resulting in WCW having to buy it. And he was always the face of the opposing team. So it was not surprising really that lots of fans would boo him, but to Hogan, it did seem to be a surprise. I don't think he really understood, you know, the level of, you know, ill feeling towards him in certain states and certain cities. You know, and he'd gone out there and I'd held my head up high. That's what he said, wasn't he? You know, I did everything for the fans. I did everything for the kids, you know, and the reception, you know, you showed me when I came out here, you know, and that was it. You fans can stick it, brother. And it was just like, you could see there was a lot of real emotion in there, a lot of genuine feeling, you know, that's what he absolutely believed and felt. And was really angry about it. And it was a great, you know, release for him, cathartic for him to go out there and just say what he really felt about the audience that had booed him. So, yeah, just outstanding. You know, one of the greatest promos ever. You know, certainly, I would say the greatest promo that decade, certainly one of the greatest, definitely top five of all time. So I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has watched that promo. You know, if you haven't, absolutely check it out. You need to check it out because it was that damn good.
And I do think, and look, I'm not bringing this up to get you to knock Cena. I am not, I honestly am not, right? But what I will say is one of the reasons I think a lot of people who are my age who had lived through the Hogan heel turn and the Hogan promo and all that, I think a lot of people salivated at the Cena version of it one day. You know, yeah. The idea that he would turn and he would finally speak to his critics and he would embrace it. And I think a lot of people really wanted that to happen. Should it have happened? That'll be the great debate, right? Because, you know, did they have someone lined up to take over from him? No, they didn't. But would somebody have come up if they had? Who knows? Because the weird thing is, in WCW, when Hogan, Hall and Nash started the NWO, they didn't really have the massive babyface, right? Because Sting was kind of a bit stale. Savage and Luger were around. Goldberg hadn't appeared yet. Sting hadn't become the Crow. So it's not like WCW definitely had that big babyface guy who was going to conquer the NWO straight away. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think a lot of people are curious about how that promo would have looked if they'd ever done it. But Vince just never wanted to do it.
He never wanted to do it. I mean, I was all for it. You know, I was encouraging WWE to do that. I think Cena should have done it. Absolutely, he should have done it. I think it could have been. I don't think it would have been as good as the Hogan heel turn, but I think it would have been a close second. I think it could have been amazing. And the heat that he would have generated with the promos, you know, knocking the audience, and to see Cena play heel and putting people over. I think, obviously, in the end, he put Bray Wyatt over at WrestleMania. I mean, that was an amazing performance by Cena, you know, putting Wyatt over in that cinematic match. It really was. But had he done this a few years earlier when he was still a full-timer and actually returned the favour for a lot of the guys that, you know, let's face it, you know, did not fare well against him in the feuds with Cena, I think he could have done so much for the company, and he still could have turned babyface at the end. You know, he still could have been that guy who, when he finally wanted to bow out and do the acting or whatever it was he would have ended up doing, he could have gone out as a babyface. And that would have been, I think, a dynamic time for WWE. Probably almost sort of something similar to when, you know, I mean, I know this is going back to the 70s, but WWF always had the babyface champion. So it was always heel challengers coming in, facing, you know, Bruno or whoever, or Pedro. And then Superstar Graham won the belt, and all the babyface challengers were able to headline Madison Square Garden, the Spectrum, and the Boston Garden, all the big venues. So you had Graham there as the heel champion facing all the babyface champions. The heel champion facing all the babyface challengers who previously would not have been, you know, obviously they did have the, there was the famous Bruno versus Pedro match at Shea Stadium, but generally it was babyface versus heel in Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWF. When Graham was champ, he could then defend against the babyfaces, and it was a completely different dynamic there. It was like, oh, wow, you know, like, Chief J Strongbow's getting a shot at the title. You know, we would never thought we would see that. And all these baby faces who'd been in the company for years would get to headline against Graham. And then, you know, I think something like that would have been something completely different to see Cena turn heel and then be champion, defend as a heel against baby faces. And use all the skullduggery to retain. And it would have been made for very different matches. Cena would have been forced to work a different style, and that would have been interesting to see. Obviously, he was very stale as an in-ring performer because he did the same things in every match. But had he been a heel, he would have had to come at it. The psychology would have been completely different. It would have been a totally different match. And I think that would have been very interesting to see as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, elsewhere, before we talk about SmackDown and Raw, there was Conan on his podcast, Keeping It 100, had said an interesting thing about CM Punk. He said that when Conan said that when he was negotiating with AEW back in the day, that AEW had told him that Punk was asking for an astronomical amount of money. They really wanted to work with him. He was asking for too much. And then, you know, Cody yesterday had said he's going to do an open challenge, and who do people want to see them face? And Punk has sort of replied yesterday with a bit of a joke, just saying, like, you know, Deuce with Domino, New Jack, and all these other people. And then Tony Khan had sort of went back and forth with him as well on it. So I'm curious how you feel about where we are now in July of 2020. Punk came back and did the backstage thing. Do you think that hurts his sort of like bargaining power financially in terms of if he does want to come back and have that one big match?
I don't know whether it does really. I mean, possibly. What it does hurt is the surprise. It definitely has diluted that heavily, because when he made that appearance on backstage last year, I mean, that was like a stunning piece of television. So, oh wow, he's finally returned to a program that's got a WWF logo on it. We never thought we'd see that. You know, we haven't seen him since January 2014. It's like, wow, you know, he's come back after what would have been nearly 6 years, wasn't it? It was very late 2019. So I think the surprise factor has been significantly reduced by his participation in backstage. And really, after week two, was he really a draw anymore? Was anyone really that interested in tuning in? I mean, I know we talked about it a couple of times, but we rapidly lost interest, didn't we, in CM Punk's association with backstage. And judging by the ratings, I think a lot of viewers did as well, because he did not hold on to those viewers, did he, Kenny, in his, you know, limited appearances on the program?
Yeah, it did. And I think the problem is that, like, I get why he did it, but I think it's just, it is one of those things of, in wrestling, we love the surprise.
Yeah.
Wrestling's about the surprise. And we didn't, you know, you kind of felt robbed of that CM Punk live arena somewhere surprise.
Yeah. I think there's still value in it.
A question. If he was going to come back and do a big match, for example, yeah. And, you know, because, like, the checkbook is open. We know if he was talking to AEW, Vince would immediately put his issues aside and want to welcome him back home,
yeah.
In inverted commas. But who do you... Is there anyone that you see who you go, Punk could have a great match with that guy? Is there a program that you see with anybody in either WWE or AEW that you think would be one of the ones that he should think of?
I mean, if he's going to return, I would prefer it was with WWE. I mean, there's more big matches there, obviously, because they've got more stars. I mean, in AEW, I mean, there's a few people that he could definitely have a feud with. I mean, Cody. I think if Kenny Omega were to turn heel, I think that's where the money is with Kenny Omega. I think he's just really treading water at the moment. So he needs to, once he turns, I think he's gonna, that's going to heat him up, or at least I hope it's going to. So I think Kenny Omega versus CM Punk, I think that could be a big match as well. But there's far more, you know, big matches in WWE. I mean, there's a big match with Brock Lesnar, with CM Punk out there, Paul Heyman on the mic opposite Punk. There's loads, so much they can talk about there. I mean, Punk's not going to have any problems in working all the reality into the promos, especially if he's opposing someone like Heyman, who we know he respects, he admires greatly. So, I mean, that could almost be like going back to 2011 again, where we've got a lot of reality that's written into the back and forth. And obviously, Punk versus Lesnar is a big match, and Punk would love to do that, and he'd love to win, of course, as well. I think he'd love to do the match and love to win more, since he put Lesnar over at, was it SummerSlam 2013, was it? Yeah, SummerSlam.
Yeah, SummerSlam 2013.
I mean, they had a tremendous match there, Punk and Lesnar, and Lesnar won that. So I think they could definitely have a two-match program at least. I think he could do something with Roman Reigns. I think there's definitely mileage in Punk versus Seth Rollins, although Seth Rollins needs to be a more dynamic character than he is at the moment, you know, because it's getting pretty tedious. I'm just hoping they're going to turn up the heat on the Rollins character. But yeah, there's a lot of people. You know, I think he could do some with Bray Wyatt. They could even do a Firefly Funhouse match. There's all sorts of people that he can work with there. Maybe even something with Jeff Hardy. I don't know whether Hardy would go for that. But as we saw on SmackDown on Friday, regrettably, I mean, that segment at the end of SmackDown, Kenny, my God. But I mean, Hardy's, you know, he's taking one for the team right now, isn't he? You know what I mean? He's a team player.
I think Jeff Hardy will be going to pastures new next year.
Well,
I don't know what it is. I just can't believe that Jeff Hardy would voluntarily want to do this. And then if he is doing it, I feel like he's just doing it because, you know, that's the gig. So yeah, he'll just do it and get over with. But, you know, I think if you're trying to get someone to stay, there are much better ways to get them to stay than to do these segments. Actually, I guess, you know, I remember somebody had said ages ago, I think it was Cornette actually was talking about one of Russo's booking ideas. I think it was the Terry miscarriage. And he was like, you know, did that sell one ticket? Did one person want to see that? And I think that this is a far less offensive version, but, you know, the alcoholism thing, I just don't think anybody watches wrestling to see that.
No, it's not. There's just nothing entertaining about it at all. Absolutely isn't. But, you know, getting back to Punk, you know, I think also, you know, he could come in as a babyface, have the babyface run, then turn heel. And there's a lot of new people in there now that he hasn't, that weren't there when he was last there in January 14. I mean, I'm sure he could do something with Matt Riddle. I think there's a lot of mileage in those two. That's if they haven't ruined Riddle by then. But I mean, there's so much talent in the WWE system that Punk could work with. I think there's fewer marketable names for Punk to work with in AEW. But you're right. I mean, if he starts negotiating proper with AEW, then Vince is going to come marching in with a big offer and probably creative control. You know, and the thing is, you know, we look back at Bret Hart in 1996, 1997 and say, oh, well, he had creative control written into his contract and it didn't count for anything, you know, when push came to shove. But Lesnar kind of has something similar, doesn't he? I mean, all the programs have to be approved in advance by Lesnar. And I'm sure something like that could be written into a contract that would be to CM Punk's satisfaction. So I'm sure there's ways and means of getting around the trust issues. I'm convinced there are in 2020. So to me, if Punk's returning to wrestling, it's going to be in WWE.
I guess we'll see. We'll see where he ends up, if he does end up somewhere. I think my gut says he's not going to wrestle again, but I could be wrong. And I think if he is, he's going to wait and get that one big deal to do it where it's going to get him the most money, which is fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't do that? Who wouldn't do precisely that?
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on to, before we talk about Raw and SmackDown, actually, or SmackDown and Raw, I always get the order wrong. Last week we were talking about the AEW and NXT potential ratings for Great American Bash, which, Finn, it's a pure coincidence that the Great American Bash concept was brought back on a Wednesday night. It's not because of anything else on TV, not because of Fyter Fest or anything else. But Great American Bash came back against Fyter Fest and won in the ratings.
It did. Yeah, it was a lot closer than the week before. AEW did 748,000 viewers to NXT's 792,000 viewers. So, yeah, NXT was the winner, but by a smaller margin than the previous week, which is, I think, what we predicted.
Yeah, and I think as we also predicted, the 18 to 49 demo was going to go to AEW over WWE. Yeah. But I think both of them probably should be fairly happy at the results, because you know the 18 to 49 is a target demo that you want, and AEW still got that. So in their mind, there is still a bit of victory there. But for WWE, they've put on a show, they've put on some big stuff, and more people have viewed that than the AEW show. So I think there's good things for both of them to look at in terms of the results.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, I think this is another big win as well for Sasha and Bayley. You know, it's Sasha Banks versus Io Shirai in the main event. And I thought that felt like a big match, you know, and that was a stature enhancer. I know I've used that phrase already during this podcast. I apologize for my repetition. Been nailed again, called out, you're revealed, exposed. But yeah, Shirai won that match. Obviously, she needed assistance from Asuka. Bayley was at ringside as well, so Asuka came out to counteract the interference from Bayley. But I thought it was a really good match. I thought it was a big match, a big win for Shirai. And I thought, you know, Sasha did really well also. And once again, it just sort of illustrated the value of the Sasha and Bayley team. You know, I mean, the stars of the show right now, Kenny.
They are the stars of the show for sure. I'm curious to see this Wednesday, tomorrow night, as we record this on Tuesday, because obviously the NXT show is headlined by Keith Lee and Adam Cole for the unification. And then AEW have got the Orange Cassidy Jericho match. And if you look at a lot of the numbers for AEW, Jericho and Orange Cassidy tend to be the biggest hitters for them in terms of when they get a quarter number or whatever. So I think that there's a chance. I think the AEW, I will say this, I thought they kind of, by having the Paige and Omega Best Friends match as the main event, kind of gave it to NXT. Because if I was watching live, I would 100% be watching Sasha and Io by a mile.
Yes.
Because you, as a viewer, you've never been made to think that Best Friends are a threat to Omega and Paige. So I think I think this week they need to try and pace the show a little bit better if they want to come out as a winner in the reigns.
I think NXT is gonna win again this week. I think it'll be close, but I think NXT has got the bigger lineup of matches, and I think they've done a really good job promoting, certainly the main event anyway. So I'm predicting another win for NXT this week. What do you think, Kenny?
I think it's going to be very close. I think it's all going to come down to how they pace the show. I think if they put I think that if I'm AEW, I am putting the 8-man tag with FTR and the Young Bucks on at the top of the second hour, and I'm doing the Orange Cassidy Jericho as the main event. I think if they do that, they've got a chance of just winning. I think if they don't do that, I think that I think the difficulty is going to be when you're watching that final segment. The only thing I think that's got a chance of people switching from Keith Lee and Adam Cole is Orange Cassidy and Jericho. For the kind of like uniqueness of it,
yeah.
What would they do? Because I know Jericho tweeted out saying it's one of his favorite matches he's ever had, and you know the last time he said that was the Stadium Stampede match, which went on to do really well on pay per view. So is that gonna help that he sort of put his stamp on it and said you need to watch this match? That's why I think they have to put that one in the main event. So I think if Orange Cassidy and Jericho main event, I think AEW might just get it, but I think if they don't, then NXT's winning it. That's a really politically Switzerland answer, isn't it? Sitting on the fucking fence.
Like, oh, you got splinters in your ass.
Anyway, while I unsplinter myself, let's talk about SmackDown from last week. I thought the show was okay. I thought the Matt Riddle and John Morrison match was really good. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was Morrison finally had something to do, which was pretty relevant. I can't say I'm thrilled at the idea of Matt Riddle versus Baron Corbin, but I get what it is. But you know, you can definitely see that they've got big plans for Riddle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did find his explanation at the start as to why he doesn't wear shoes. I just found that story, it was kind of like one of my stories. You know, I used to tell my friends, you know, and they're like, oh God, Finley, we're not another one of your stories. Try not to tell these stories on the podcast. And it went on a bit. I thought, oh my God, this is SmackDown. And Riddle's going on about catching frostbite or nearly catching frostbite when he was a kid. Actually, no, he did have frostbite and nearly losing some of his toes when he was a kid. So I thought that was a bit weird, telling that story. Then King Corbin came out to mock Riddle, and Corbin was obnoxious. Riddle then challenged Corbin, and instead Corbin introduced John Morrison as Riddle's opponent. Corbin said that as the king, he can make matches. He was challenged about this when he sat in on commentary. And Michael Cole and Corey Gray, oh, actually it was Michael Cole, you know, how come you're making matches, Mr. Corbin, King Corbin? And he's like, well, I'm the king. I can make matches. So, I mean, yeah, Riddle and Morrison, it was a very different match to what we've seen before from John Morrison. There was a lot of different moves and sequences. I thought there was a little bit of sloppiness and some hesitation there. You know, you could tell that they were unfamiliar with each other. But, I mean, it was definitely an interesting match. Riddle overcame distractions from both The Miz and King Corbin to score the pin on Morrison. So it was another big night for Riddle. You know, he got the promo beforehand, which wasn't really that interesting, but he still got the mic time. You know, Corbin backed down from his challenge, and then he overcame interference to defeat John Morrison. So you're right, they've obviously got big plans for this guy. And you know, I was saying earlier, if they don't screw it up with Matt Riddle, well, it's time for them to do that, yeah. But so far, so good with Matt Riddle, Kenny.
Have you seen anything more bizarre than during AJ Styles and Drew Gulak for the Intercontinental title having Daniel Bryan on Zoom? It was the most... I was so distracted from the match because I felt so jarred by it.
Yeah, it was a bit odd. You know, we should mention also that AJ Styles, prior to this match, he came out to attack Riddle, and it was Drew Gulak who made the save, and that then led to the Styles versus Drew Gulak match.
Which we had been advertised, was it last week or the week before? It was supposed to happen when there was the whole taping stuff. So we're getting this advertised match finally.
Finally, yes. So, and as you said, Daniel Bryan kept chiming in via Zoom, which was very, very strange indeed.
And he kept chiming in a way that I'm not 100% sure he completely was watching what was going on. He was saying such sort of like generic platitudes. I was going,
yeah,
he's not watching this match. They've just been like, press play in your Zoom and just talk. We'll give you some lines. It was so bizarre.
Yeah, it just felt all a bit flat. And you can tell with Bryan when his heart's in it, you know, because he really puts some emotion into it. And this just felt like he'd sent it in via Zoom, didn't it, Kenny? Phoned it, just like...
Which is ironic that we're recording this on Zoom and we're not half-arsing it or phoning it in.
Absolutely we're not. There's some passion in these words. You are right. I mean, it's just like Bryan, it was like he couldn't really be asked, wasn't it? It's like, right, we need you to do this, Bryan. What do you have to say? Well, just say something generic and we'll just sort of try and find an appropriate place to use it during the match. And it just felt so, you know, limp and unconvincing. And I really felt for Gulak during this match. I mean, he really felt like he was going somewhere before he, you know, played hardball on the contract negotiations. And he just seemed like a bit of a nobody here. You know, Styles hit the Styles Clash and then waited a long time before he hit the phenomenal forearm for the pin. Gulak, to me, just at no point did he seem like he was at any sort of threat to AJ Styles in this match. And at the end, it just felt like Styles was toying with him before he beat him. So I felt this was a real, you know, stature diminisher for Drew Gulak.
It kind of reminded me, it's different because I thought that Kenny Omega and Adam Page actually did give best friends a lot on the Dynamite match last week, but it kind of reminded me of that in the sense of like nobody believed that Drew Gulak had a chance for the Intercontinental title, and I think that was part of the problem.
But if you go back, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks or whenever it was, when Gulak was going through a really hot before his contract expired and he disappeared for a short time, that version of Drew Gulak would have been competitive with AJ Styles. But last Friday, the version we saw on last Friday's SmackDown was not competitive at all.
No, it was not.
Which is bizarre. You know, you just signed this guy up for a load more years. You're paying him all this money and you're treating him like he's a nobody. What sense does that make?
We also didn't see Strowman and Wyatt on this episode, which I assume they're saving them for the... There was a video package, but I assume they're saving them for the go-home show. I was surprised. I thought that we would see something.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a preview, wasn't there? Which, you know, the editing team had excelled themselves on that. But the whole thing felt like a nothing burger, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm just because we're talking about them. I don't want to compare AEW and WWE to everything, but like, you know, when I was watching remember a couple of weeks ago when FTR had that sit down interview when they were kind of giving their mission statement, what they wanted to do when they were in AEW. And I think that one of the things that they've done pretty well in AEW is the tag team division by having Paige and Omega the champions, who don't really feel just like two guys, two random guys. They feel like a team. You've got all these teams vying for the titles. And then on SmackDown, they had the match with Kofi and Shinsuke Nakamura. And it's all supposed to be leading to the New Day against Cesaro and Nakamura. And it doesn't feel in any way exciting. It just doesn't feel like any of it matters. The titles don't feel like they matter. The teams don't feel like they matter. And I kind of almost feel like with WWE, maybe it's time, like the women's tag titles, to unify the tag belts and have a team, you know, go from show to show, because at least that way, you know, you could have some drama of the New Day. You know, they've got to face Nakamura and Cesaro, but then on Raw, Rollins and Murphy are after them. And then on, you know, you could tell some stories with that. But it just seems like the SmackDown tag titles just don't feel like they mean anything.
Yeah, it's almost like a floating team, you know, that participates in both brands. And I mean, Street Profits have disappeared. At least it'd give the Street Profits something to do, wouldn't it? I noticed actually Bianca Belair was on Main Event last week. Can you believe that? Bianca Belair on Main Event.
And apparently this week's Main Event is going to have Shayna Baszler on it.
It's like, you know, Shayna gets those wins over Natalya, does that, in, you know, awesome, cruel promo on Becky Lynch. Kind of feels like she's got a character that could get over and work because it's so different to anything else. And is a villain that we can dislike, even detest. And then she disappears. You know, and Bianca was brought in, you know, around WrestleMania, wasn't it? She made her first appearance. Was it WrestleMania?
Yeah, it was WrestleMania, yeah.
WrestleMania. And I think she's only made a couple appearances since and then disappeared now on Main Event. So, yeah, very disappointing. But I'm absolutely with you here on the Nakamura versus Kingston match. I mean, what a letdown. I mean, Cesaro and Big E were at ringside. They were ejected. Cesaro ended up returning. You know, Nakamura scored such an anticlimactic. It was Nakamura who scored such an anticlimactic pinfall, didn't he, Kenny?
It was one of those ones where if it wasn't our job to talk about it, you would probably fast forward it.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. And this is for the tag team championship. So, I mean, it just feels like we've been here before, which we have. There's no energy. There's no enthusiasm. It feels like morale's gone out the window. You know, I mean, it's like there aren't any other, you know, Morrison and Miz were obviously trashed by Braun Strowman at the last pay-per-view. So they're not a credible team anymore. The Forgotten Sons have been forgotten about due to Jackson Ryker's comments. It just feels like this tag team division has gone completely down the toilet. This is just not interesting. It's just, you know, derivative. It's just, we've been here before. Give us something new. Feels like we're just in this, you know, holding pan. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not interested in seeing a title match between Kingston and Big E and Nakamura and Cesaro. I mean, they may very well have a good match. They could let's face it, they could have a tremendous match, but it's just like neither team really feels hot right now. Neither team really feels like they're that into what they're doing either. I mean, it's just etched on the faces that they're kind of going through the motions, which is a shame.
And then, of course, the main event segment. Take it away, Finn. Let's talk about the main event segment.
Yeah, I mean, a toast to Jeff Hardy. There's all these, you know, there's Sheamus' personal bartender, Jeeves, was in the ring. They'd set up a table with all these bottles of spirits. Sheamus wasn't there. He was on the big screen. He was mocking Jeff for his DUIs and his mugshots, did like a really cruel poem. You know, there's no humor to be found in any of this. It's not funny. It can't be funny. And it's like, why are they doing this? I mean, it's just any mileage that there was in this has long since been wrung out. There isn't anything left to do with this. It's just now sad to see. Jeff was there. He just looked to me to be a guy who was, it was like he was on trial again. He just looked like deflated, defeated. You know, he just looked like a guy who just would rather be somewhere else. As Sheamus was reading out these tired lines that are just, you know, not funny, not even really villainous, just, you know, boring and annoying and just unnecessary. I mean, everyone knows somebody who's had a problem with addiction. I certainly know people in my family who have, and, you know people in life who have, and it's not something to be made fun of. It just isn't. I mean, I'm sure most people would agree with that. I mean, I just don't see how there's any humor or entertainment to be found in this.
Every week you want to see Jeff Hardy and Sheamus less and less, which is a shame because they together should be a decent feud, and it just every week it gets more. It's rough. It's rough to watch it.
Yeah, it is. I think Sheamus is embarrassed by this as well, and I think, you know, I'd like to see Sheamus and Hardy, you know, show some backbone here and just say, right, we're not doing this anymore. We don't like this. This is not entertaining. It's bad for WWE. It's bad for our careers. It's insensitive. It's much worse than insensitive. It's just horrible, unpleasant programming and needs to end. And we need to just have this blow-off match. Presumably this will be taking place at Extreme Rules. My God, I hope that is the final match of this feud. Jeff Hardy needs to win. Sheamus needs to receive his comeuppance, and they all need to move on. And let's just kind of almost try and pretend this never happened. But, you know, if they're going to do another angle next week to promote an Extreme... Have they actually announced a match between them at Extreme
Rules? It's not been announced yet.
I mean, we've got two more SmackDowns, haven't we? We've got this Friday's and the following Friday.
Yeah, so two
presumably
more.
Presumably something will be announced this Friday, the 10th. You know, I'm really hoping that they avoid any mention of Jeff Hardy's, addiction problems or anything like that, because it's just painful to watch. Unnecessary. None of us want to watch this anymore. And, I think Sheamus and Hardy need to say something. I mean, these two have been around long enough now and have got enough power.
They've got the clout to say something.
Yeah, of course they can. And like, they need to just say, no, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to, you know, give WWE forewarning and not just turn up on the night and say, we're not doing it. Give them forewarning to write something else. You know, another way to promote this blow-off match, which presumably will take place at Extreme Rules. You know, let's give Jeff his win and Sheamus receives his comeuppance and we can all move on.
Well, let's move on ourselves to Raw.
The way, Kenny, just one last thing on Sheamus. What has happened to Elias?
Well, so Elias apparently has a pretty bad shoulder injury. He's going to be out for about 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
Shoulder. But it's don't have an explanation of that, do we? We've not been told anything. He got ran over, now he's dead. There's just no explanation.
Yeah.
So Raw opened with Drew McIntyre doing a promo. Ziggler comes out. What the hell is Ziggler doing with his hair?
My God. It's like, I remember one time, I guess it was about 2008, 2009, when Billy Gunn and Road Dogg were in TNA, and they, I think it was Billy Gunn impersonated Triple H, and he had this like prosthetic on his face and this awful wig. I think it was Billy Gunn. Mm-hmm. And Dolph looked just like that. His hair looked so bad. It looked like a bad wig, like a bad syrup, didn't it?
You know? Yeah, it was atrocious. Because if you're like in your 20s or 30s, right, you probably have a parent or a older brother or sister or somebody that you know who used to go out like clubbing or whatever, go to bars in the 80s, right? And you always see somebody pulls out the perm photos or the tash or whatever. There's all these photos that you get from the 80s and they're horrific. Dolph Ziggler's hairstyle is one that people in the 80s would judge. That's how bad it is. He comes out here and he says that, you know, Drew stabs people in the back. He's not going to tell us the stipulation for the pay-per-view because he'd be an idiot if he gave it away. He's not going to give it away till the show. And then he said, you know, you've got a history of stabbing people in the back. And out comes Heath Slater with a free agent t-shirt on. Very serious. He basically talks about how, you know, where have you been for me? You know, when you won at WrestleMania, I cried for you, my friend, my love for you. But where were you for me? The only time you spoke to me is on the bump. You know, I'm fighting for my two girls at home, not the 22 kids the world thinks I have. This isn't a gimmick to me. And he cuts this very different promo to what we expect from Heath Slater. And he wants a title match. So he basically slaps and pushes Drew to get the title match. And then Dolph distracts Drew briefly, but then McIntyre smashes Heath with a Claymore kick. 1, 2, 3 in 24 seconds. And then after the match, Ziggler's trying to beat up Heath. Drew comes out for the save and the friends reunite and have a hug. Odd segment, but did it work for you? I'm curious, did the Heath Slater and bringing him in and, you know, trying to use some history and manipulate it, did it work for the story?
Well, in a way, it worked as a I mean, I guess it depends on where it goes from here, but it felt like Heath's involvement ended here, didn't it? I mean, like, you know...
I think it is one and done.
Yeah, how can Heath be involved next week or at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view? I can't see...
If he was involved, he's not getting beaten 24 seconds.
Exactly. So I thought Slater's performance was tremendous. You know, there was a lot of emotion there. It felt very sincere. And I thought Drew was really good. I mean, Dolph was just like, as you say, I mean, you just couldn't stop looking at his hair. I mean, it was just such a disaster. And it's like, I mean, there's bad hair days and then there's this.
Bad hair decades.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you go, someone needs to put a picture of this into Google Images, and when you type in bad hair day, that needs to come up on Google Images. It was that awful. So, but I mean, I enjoyed Slater's performance, but I don't really know what purpose it served because Drew defeated him so quickly, as well as he should have done. I mean, I understand him. I mean, maybe the match could have gone a couple of minutes, but... You know, would it really have made any difference if it had?
Drew, I think that would have only helped Slater, but not helped Drew.
Exactly. And if Heath's not going to be involved from, you know, after this point, then there was no point this match lasting any longer than it did. And it was a nice little send off for Heath, you know, with, you know, Dolph attacking Drew afterwards, and then Dolph attacking Heath afterwards, and then Drew making the save. And then they hugged, and that was nice to see. So I enjoyed it as a self-contained segment. I thought all the players hit their markers and did everything they were supposed to do. But I don't really understand how it enhanced the Dolph versus Drew match. And I also don't really understand why they haven't announced the stipulation yet. I mean, that is the point, isn't it, of gimmick matches, is you get the word out early so that you can promote them.
I did like that Drew kind of in his promos was essentially saying, you know, doesn't matter what stipulation you pick, you're still getting beat, which, yes. You know, we spoiler, you know, we all know that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really enjoyed Heath's performance. As I say, I thought all of them were really good in it. But I don't really see how it didn't make me any more interested in this match. And had they announced a stipulation and done something to promote that stipulation, I might have been, probably wouldn't have been, but I might have been.
maybe would have been. Well, listen, let's for the last thing for Raw that I want to talk about is the women's stuff that I thought was great. So let's build up to that. What did you make of the Seth Rollins stuff where he was on the Kevin Owens show and Owens was kind of prodding him for losing at WrestleMania? We end up with a tag match with Owens and Mysterio against Seth Rollins and Murphy because Rollins and Murphy had attacked Aleister Black, who was Rey's scheduled partner.
Yeah.
And Owens and Mysterio won the match. The stipulation was whichever team won the one that Mysterio or Rollins were in, they would get to pick the stipulation for Extreme Rules. And it's going to be an eye for an eye. I mean, they're calling it the horror show. It really is the horror show. We're going to have to watch Seth Rollins try to be Terry Funk. What did you make of the match? And is Seth Rollins, is it working for you anymore with Seth? Is it working less? No.
No, it's not working for me. And this announcement by Rey Mysterio is not working for me either. An eye for an eye match? What the hell does that mean? I mean, presumably, I suppose, you know, Rey will do to Seth what Seth did to Rey some weeks back.
Rey said that what he wanted to do at Extreme Rules was pull his eye out of the socket with his bare hands. So at this point, you might as well go, the stipulation is murder. This is a murder match. I want to murder you. Because we know it's not happening. It's so bonkers that, like, although I will forgive all of this if Seth Rollins has a wonky eye for like a year and he has to play up to it. That, then I'll forgive it. But I don't see them going down a comedy route with it.
Yeah, like a grievous bodily harm match or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, well, that's not going to happen. You know, presumably it'll almost be like, you know, the Terry Funk, Jerry Lawler empty arena match, you know, where Terry Funk gets the, I think it was a piece of wood in his eye, my eye, and the match stops. It's always going to be something like that. That's going to be the finish, isn't it? With Mysterio, presumably, inflicting an eye injury on Seth Rollins, I imagine. Unless, of course, as I predicted last week, Dominic turns heel on Rey.
It's worth noting here that Dominic was, even though he was in Rey's corner, he seemed less, he didn't seem like he was standing up for his dad quite as much as he was before.
No, I noticed that as well. So I'm not quite sure. I don't understand. I mean, I understand what Rey said. I listened to it, but I don't really get it at all. And, you know, this is actually, again, this has reduced my interest in this match. Why didn't they just come up with a standard stipulation? I guess they could have done like a first blood match or something like that and actually gone backstage and used fake blood, you know, so that no one had to blade. They could have done something like that. And that would have been in keeping with the horror show theme and motto of the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. I mean, that to me would have been more fitting with, you know, the rage and the enmity of this feud. You know, there's obviously lots of hatred between the two camps, so that would have made more sense. As for this eye thing, I just don't get it, Kenny. Don't get it at all.
Absolutely,
I'm sure
baffling.
I'm not the only one.
We should also note that we had a six-man tag with the Big Show and the Viking Raiders against Orton, Andrade, and Angel Garza. I actually thought that Ric Flair was really good in the pre-match promo where he was talking to Andrade and Garza, sort of saying, you know, you guys need to win this. And if you don't, all of us will have to answer to Randy Orton. And then Orton came up and kind of, you know, was playing the cool guy and, you know, basically saying everything's fine, but if you fuck this up, then, you know, you're screwed, essentially. And then in the end, Orton ends up, you know, coming in and doing the RKO on one of the Viking Raiders to get the win. So I actually thought Orton's performance on the show was really good, which at least made Big Show's existence a little bit more bearable.
Well, that was it. I mean, prior to the match, we had, you know, Big Show backstage with the Viking Raiders who were clowning around, and Show slapped Eric and Ivar on the chest, and because they weren't taking it seriously enough, and that was followed by lots of heavy breathing. You know, when wrestlers do the heavy breathing, that
means
they're taking it seriously.
Well, a couple of funny things about that. I can't remember if it's Ivar or Eric, but one of them made a point of saying, you know, Edge and Christian were your friends, and we grew up watching them, and Edge is a Viking guy. That was quite funny.
Oh, yeah, that was quite funny, yeah. But, like, I got that.
The Big Show is telling us, or telling the Viking Raiders, that they need to take it seriously. The star of the Big Show show, Shokishi?
Yeah.
Shonan the Barbarian?
Yeah, it was definitely a shift in demeanor from the previous week.
He changes character like the wind.
Yeah, he does. There's not much consistency there. Orton ended up pinning Eric with the RKO. And Orton in the match, he was avoiding the Big Show, wasn't he? He kept fleeing from the Big Show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a message to the Big Show. And then after the match, Orton was there kind of gloating about his victory. Big Show's there in the ring, raging. So again, you know, Big Show versus Orton. I mean, Extreme Rules, it's not shaping up to be the show of the year at this point, is it? I mean, it just isn't. Can I also just say that Tom Phillips said something on commentary? And I had to listen to this twice because I thought I'd misheard it the first time. This is what Tom Phillips said. This is what has ticked off Big Show for 20-some odd years with Randy Orton. Is that, quote, Randy Orton lacks the self-discipline and lacks the motivation to make himself better. That is the Big Show's words about Randy Orton.
The Big Show should first of all be pointing fingers at himself, if that's the context of his problem. Reed, can you read that again? So let's imagine that Big Show, so what Big Show said about Randy Orton, let's pretend he's saying it about the Big Show. What was his problem exactly?
Big Show in the amended version lacks the self-discipline and lacks the motivation to make himself better.
I mean, I know which one sounds more likely. Yeah. I know the one that's more realistic.
Big Show, Randy Orton lacks the self-discipline and lacks the motivation to make himself better. I think we know who's the real culprit there. So that was bizarre. Also, we had another little gem there from Tom Phillips. Ladies love Ivar. Well, that's what we learned from all those segments with the Street Profits.
Well, I mean, Sarah Logan is pregnant now. Is Ivar that she's with?
I think it's Eric.
Oh, God, well no, let's not start in here in case the ladies love Ivar and that's his baby. We also in the show had...
Well, that just illustrates, doesn't it, what a woeful job they've done of getting each one of these guys over. And, you know, the fact that you're struggling to actually put names to who is who, you know?
I always forget every time. So MVP unveiled a new US title because he wants to beat Apollo Crews for it at the pay-per-view. I thought the new title looked dreadful. I don't know why, like, so... Because I Googled it before we talked about this because I was like, I want to remember it. I don't necessarily. I thought the WCW, like the actual WCW, not WWF's version in 2001. But I thought WCW had some pretty, good looking belts, and I think their US title was a pretty good looking belt. And no WWE title they've tried to make has ever come close to looking as good as the WCW one. And I don't know why they can't get it right. I mean, it's a US title. It should look prestigious. It doesn't need to look like America threw up on it.
I mean, it's just so gaudy, isn't it? It's just, I don't know. It just strikes me as like, it's like somebody, almost like something that had been designed by a cheap jewelry store. I mean, I think they should have gone back to the 1980 version when, you know, Ric Flair and Roddy Piper fought over it way back then in the early 80s before Flair became NWA World Champion. And I think that would have been, you know, like a modern version on that vintage belt. I mean, that was kind of clunky as well.
I just Googled it. But even that one, the red and the blue and the gold, it looks better. It looks better than the one they've got now.
Yeah, and it was like a vintage belt and you could have kind of done like a tribute to that, done a version of that with like a modern twist. But yeah, I don't really like any. I mean, I think the WWE title... both the belts that Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman hold, I don't think either of them scream prestige.
I like the North American title. I like that one.
Yes.
That's probably the only one. That's probably the only one that. The NXT UK title is now. I like that one. I think that's the only two.
It kind of reminded me the TNA title that Moose has recently been carrying around. It's kind of really chunky. Can't the new US title reminds me of that. And that's not a flattering comparison.
No, it's not. But so Bobby Lashley and MVP, I thought they were pretty good in this show. MVP seems to be still recruiting to have somebody join. Is it going to be Ricochet? Is it going to be Cedric? Is it going to be Apollo? Will it be all of them? Who knows? But I think MVP has, in this era, really shown that he is valuable. He's knocked it out of the park and really become a one of the best parts of Raw.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, he's there. He's had to do lots of different things. And I think he's really worked well with everyone. And it's like he's like the veteran who's there, you know, working with the younger guy. And it seems at times like the attention is on MVP. But I think he's really trying to direct our attention to the person that he's working with and trying to get that person over. And I think the part of the show that really lingered in the mind's eye for me was when he was talking to Cedric and just saying to him, you know, we're in the fighting business. You know, if you don't, you know, start thinking of your own career, you're going to be in the catering business because that's the only place you're going to be. You know, and he's saying, well, Ricochet's got this 365 documentary. You know, what have you got? You know, you need to start thinking of yourself. And Cedric's there, well, I see what you're doing. You're trying to divide us. But it was very much MVP putting the emphasis on Cedric, saying, you know, you're a guy, you've got all this talent, but you need to do something else, you know, and that's come on board with MVP, you know, and Lashley. I'm going to make you a star. So I'm hoping this goes somewhere, and this isn't going to be one of those storylines that's just dropped. You know, it's kind of hard to see Cedric Alexander becoming a star in this environment. But there again, how many times did we say that you know, Bailey was doomed? You know, we were comparing her to Brenda from IT for years. You know, look at her now. You know?
She's no Karen anymore.
So, I mean, you know, there's not hope for everyone, but there's certainly hope for a lot more people than we think there is. You know, if you find them the right character, put them in the right environment with the right storyline support and characters around them, you know, that's what the booking's supposed to do. It's supposed to get people over. You know, it's supposed to hide their shortcomings. It's supposed to prop them up and make them seem like bigger stars than they are. So I'm hoping that MVP and Cedric, there's going to be, you know, a union here, and that this is, you know, this is going to result in a growing faction for MVP that's going to become a real force on the Raw brand.
We should also note that on the big part of Raw was we saw the return of Kairi Sane. Yeah. With Asuka, so we saw Kairi Sane taking on Sasha Banks. Kairi got the win by DQ and Bayley ran in. And then the main event of the show, we saw Asuka and Bayley. I thought a really great match. Really, really enjoyed it. I thought all the characters played it well. You know, we had Kairi on the outside with Sasha. We had Nikki Cross on commentary. I thought all the stuff they did with the women, especially the kind of, you know, champion versus champion match in the main event and the returning Kairi against Sasha, just kind of highlighted, if they're not the best part of the show, Bayley and Sasha, they're not going to be across all the different brands. And, you know, from Io and Sasha, which I know you got to watch from NXT last week.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, they may be the act of WWE right now.
Oh, they are, without a doubt. You know, Asuka pinned Bayley and Bayley was miffed afterwards. And that means that Asuka and Kairi will now face Bayley and Sasha for the women's tag team title next week on Raw, doesn't it?
Yep, they're next Monday. And, you know, that's a big match. Kairi and Asuka, former tag champs, Bayley and Sasha, current champs. Like, that's a big match.
It is. And it's really nice to see Kairi back and being productive again. And she's a far better fit as a babyface than she ever was as a heel. So, I mean, that really works well for her as well. I mean, a character and a style. She had the recorder again, Kenny. Belted out a tune on the recorder.
It was so good. She did Asuka's theme on the recorder. Charlie Caruso was just loving it, as was I, as were you, as was everybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love watching the match with Asuka and Bayley, you know, Banks is at ringside and she's, you know, each time Bailey's in peril, the camera's going to Sasha. you know, who's there like panic stricken. And, you know, I think they do such a great job, Bailey and Banks on the outside during the others' matches, of really selling the gravity of what's occurring in the ring. And that's why the camera keeps seeking their reactions. So, I mean, you know, they were all a big part of the success of this match. It was the right result with Bailey doing the job. I mean, let's face it, Bailey and Banks, they've won a lot of matches lately. So it was about time they did the job. And also that then led, of course, to the tag team match on next week's Raw, which we all want to see, because that's effective promotion for the matches. The match at Extreme Rules. I mean, as things stand, I mean, I'm looking forward to Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman. But I mean, the two other matches, I mean, I know they haven't announced many matches yet, so this might seem like, you know, sort of faint praise. But I mean, the two women's title matches, apart from Wyatt versus Braun Strowman, to me, the matches that I'm most looking forward to Extreme Rules. You know, what do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, no, the women's stuff is definitely the best built. I mean, the Extreme Rules looks on paper like an easy show to watch for the most part. I mean, Apollo Crews and MVP should be fun. The Swamp fight I'm looking forward to, the two women's title matches that we just talked about are being built really well. Mysterio and Rollins, eye for an eye. I hope it's so bad that it's good.
Yeah.
That's about the best I can say about it. But I think it's a credit to Bailey and Sasha and their act, that their act is so good that it's kind of being spread across two different matches and two different brands. And that's not something that everybody gets to do.
Actually three, Kenny, when you think about it.
NXT, yeah, three when you add in NXT. And, you know, Sasha was even saying, what was she called it? She said that she'd be Sasha three shows and Bailey three brands or whatever. So, yeah, and it doesn't feel... you know, touch wood because I don't want to jinx it. It doesn't feel it too much. It feels like the story kind of calls for them to be doing what they're doing. So I'm okay with it. Whereas sometimes it feels kind of forced, and I'm glad it doesn't here.
Do you want Sasha to defeat Asuka for the title?
I'm going to say no. I think for the story to continue in a good way, I think you want to see Sasha help Bailey beat Nikki. And then you want to see Sasha be unsuccessful, because then you can continue to build Sasha and Bailey, and Bailey still with the belt. And then hopefully, the night after the horror show at Extreme Rules, we see Shayna Baszler attack Asuka, and we finally get that program. That would be my wish. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree, yeah. I mean, it's a kind of an unimaginative way to go about the booking of making Sasha a double champ as well. But it's like, well, what's really the point of that? Because if she doesn't win the belt, then that's more likely to lead to tension between Sasha and Bailey, which is, you know, that's still there, isn't it, with them volunteering each other for matches. We had that again, didn't we? Actually, we had that on SmackDown. I think, didn't Sasha volunteer Bailey for a match on SmackDown? I think she did, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
And Bailey didn't really react to that. But when Bailey volunteered Sasha for a match with, I think it was with anyone, wasn't it? And then Kyrie came out. I think that's the way it played out.
Yeah, it was.
And then Sasha was like, upset, what you're doing? And then I think, was it Sasha who mentioned about them defending the tag team title the following week? I think Bailey was kind of opposed to that idea. So we need to keep that going. There's not, you know, there's obviously a little bit of tension there, a little bit of unease, but not what we need to drive the wedge between these two. So there's the big split. So, I mean, it's going to have to be a pretty significant event for these two to fall out and then have the big feud. And it's also, I think, because it's working so well, I think it's going to be, maybe WWE is going to prolong this for a little bit longer. I mean, I'm not sure what the original plan was for when this partnership was going to end, but it almost seems too soon to split them after Extreme Rules, maybe after SummerSlam. I think it's still got another 6 or 7 weeks left in it before we do the big split. I mean, I don't know really, but it still feels like...
A lot of mileage left in the tank.
Yeah, there's a lot of life left in it yet. But I mean, yeah, absolutely, Extreme Rules. If Bailey retains with Sasha's help and then Sasha loses after Bailey's interference backfires, that adds a new dimension to the story, which we're probably going to need by then, because they've got to keep giving layers to this, otherwise it will kind of start to run out of steam. And that would be such a shame to see, because they've got something, you know, that's really quite magical at the moment.
Well, there you have it. That was, we'll be back next week with, obviously, kind of the go-home Raw will have been dealt with, and we'll kind of know the SmackDown side of stuff as well. But yeah, good stuff all around. Finn, do you have any plugs for us before we head off?
No plugs, Kenny. I think we talked about the Q&A. Yes, we talked about the Q&A last week, so no new plugs. I don't know about you, Kenny. Have you got any?
Head over to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideRopes to support us if you can. You can get that Q&A that Finn did last week. It's up there now. It is tremendous. You can also get bonus podcasts with us where we look at old issues of Power Slam, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, so much stuff on there. So we hope that you'll give us a chance. And also youtube.com/InsideRopes, where you can get interview content, put some Mick Foley stuff up, him talking about Hell in a Cell with Undertaker, which is now sitting over 360,000 hits, and a new video that went up last night, which is Foley talking about how important the Undertaker character was to Mankind working when he got into WWF in 1996. So well worth checking out. Finn, I hope you enjoy your week, whatever you're up to.
Yes, and you as well, Kenny. I'm not going to bore people with the details of what I'm going to be getting up to.
DIY.
Actually, it's not going to be that boring. I'm going to be doing some visiting family members. So that will be nice.
There you go. Just getting out and about, seeing people. Just don't be giving them the COVID.
well, yes. Hopefully I won't.
Thank you very much, everybody, for all your support and supporting us through all the stuff that's going on. We appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon. If I'm sad tonight.